Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Here's your host, Brandon Contes.
All righty, welcome to episode 46 of the Awful Announcing Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Contes, and this week we are joined by the former voice of Alabama football, but still legendary sportscaster, Eli Gold. Eli, thanks so much for coming on the podcast today, and let's just begin by asking, how are you feeling? Because I know you spoke with Awful Announcing last year after you were free of cancer, but how are you feeling today, if you don't mind us asking?
No, that's fine. I'm doing very well. Thank you, Brandon. I've had all my tests done. I've had everything done, and I'm totally I'm really doing quite well. So thank the good Lord for those favors, that's for sure.
Great. That's great to hear. And then how did it feel last year getting to return to the broadcast booth after missing the 2022 season? How important was that for you, getting back to the booth last year?
Well, that was probably the best medicine I could have had, getting back on the air, doing Bama games, doing other work. It was wonderful. So, it was really good. Of course, the Tide played good ball, as we know, and it was quite a year. But my health was good, and getting back into the broadcast booth was always a goal of mine, and it's worked out nicely. Thank you.
Did sitting out that season, did it cause you to think about retirement at all? Whether that caused you to realize retirement might be soon, or whether it even caused you to just realize that you know that retirement is still far off?
Oh, retirement is still far off. Thank you. I really love working, and you know, when things went south with the University of Alabama, it was 2 hours, and Jacksonville State University hired me to do their work, and then the Nashville Cats of the Arena Football League hired me. So I was basically out of work for 2 hours. So no, I have no intention of hanging it up. I'm healthy, and my voice is good. My brain is sharp. So I'm going to keep on going for as long as folks will have me.
Did you, out of work for 2 hours, did you consider like holding off to see what other opportunities were going to come? Cause I'm sure like if you got two calls in those 2 hours, that there were probably others in the pipeline that were going to be coming as well.
Brandon, I didn't want to wait. If these folks were kind enough to act that quickly, I was kind enough to accept that quickly. And you just never know what the future holds. But I've known the guys at Jacksonville State from the head coach, Rich Rodriguez, the athletic director, Greg Seitz, all of his underlings, if you will. I've known them for years. And the same thing in Nashville. You know, I used to do the Nashville Predators of the NHL, so I know the market. I know the people. I said, yes. And then we didn't even talk about compensation till a week or so later. We didn't, it never even came up in conversation.
Last season, you called home games for Alabama, but not road games. Was that limited travel schedule something that you had wanted, or was it a school decision?
That was a school decision exclusively.
So was it, did you have any say in it?
None whatsoever. I made it clear that I was available and I was healthy and I was ready to work every game. And then, of course, the school quickly gave me the Iron Bowl, which was on the road at Auburn. But as the crow flies, I probably could have gotten to Mississippi State quicker from where I live than I could to Auburn. So, no, that was strictly, I had no say in the matter whatsoever.
Were there any discussions or warning signs during last season? I mean, even was that a possible warning sign that that caused you to realize that maybe there was a chance Alabama was going to consider moving on from you after that season? Or were you just as surprised as all of us were?
I was surprised. My wife kept telling me, she said, something's not right here. And she was afraid that that might have been the portent of things to come. But I figured after having, you know, gotten a great welcome back by the fans and by the team, I felt that it was fine. But, you know, it is what it is. They chose to go, as they say, in a different direction. And though I didn't agree with that by any stretch of the imagination, that was their prerogative to do so.
Sure. Was there a reason that they gave you?
The only reason was, is we've decided to go in a different direction. And then at one point, the athletic director said he didn't know if I really was up to the task, whether I really had, you know, met the standards that Alabama wants and expects. I obviously disagreed. I listened to all the tapes of all the broadcasts last year, and I thought my work was fine. I was as strong at the end of the day as I was at the beginning of the day. But, you know, you can't argue with City Hall. And they made the choice, and life goes on.
Yeah, and I do find that in general, with broadcasters are usually their own biggest critics. So, like, you can usually tell after a broadcast whether you had a great call or a substandard one, but you didn't feel.
And you know what, Brandon? Yeah. I told our athletic director, and I told my immediate boss, I said, look, I will never embarrass myself by going on the air and doing a subpar job. And I certainly would never embarrass the University of Alabama.
Yeah.
If I wasn't cutting it, I would have stepped aside because I was not going to, you know, I didn't want them to say, well, Eli hung around too long. But I felt that I did a good job. And, you know, they obviously didn't agree. And after 36 years, I was shown the door.
What has the response been like from fans after Alabama parted ways with you?
It was, you know, very much in my favor. They hated to see it. They thought I should have been treated better and so on. But, you know, I made it a point, Brandon, I'm not going to talk poorly about the university. I'm not going to say anything poorly about I'm not going to say anything bad about the athletic director or my boss, whether I want to or not, but I'm just not going to lower myself to that. I just felt it was difficult and that they made a choice that I didn't agree with. But, you know, thankfully, Jacksonville State and the Nashville Cats and other people were quick to call and say, hey, let's go to work. And I did. So I couldn't be happier.
You were the voice of a dynasty for fans, and I think your name, because of that, is forever going to be attached to the Nick Saban era. And it's a tenure that certainly, you know, 36 years, it's worthy of celebration. Are you ready to return to Alabama if and when they want to honor you at a football game?
Well, spring game. And the problem was they didn't want me to talk about what happened. You know, they said, and I'm not going to go into all the details, but I felt like I was stymied in what I was going to be able to say. And I just wouldn't do that. And so they decided not to honor me. And they decided, you know, whatever, you know, take away my parking pass for next season. Not that I'm going to go, because I'm going to be working for Jacksonville State. But, you know, they took away my parking pass. They, you know, little stuff like that. And, you know, whatever. I'll tell you something, Brandon. The ultimate bottom line to all of this is that after 36 years, they will never be able to take away the magnificent memories, the special friendships. None of that will ever be able to be taken away from me. All the national titles, none of that. I was happy to be part of it. And those are going to be elements of this job that stay with me forever. And, you know, whether I'm working there or not, whether I'm on their good list or their bad list, whether I have their parking pass or not, I'm still going to have those magnificent memories and those magnificent friendships that they'll never be able to strip away from me.
Obviously the fan base loved you right up until the end, but what was the reaction from fan? Like, were you immediately welcomed by fans when you joined Alabama back in 1988?
Oh, no, not at all. I was a New York guy. I was a pro sports guy. You know, I had done NFL. I had done NHL. I didn't have connections per se to the University of Alabama. I wasn't a local guy. So no, it took many years. It took many, many years before I was truly accepted. You know, things got easier in 1992 when the team won the national championship. Nobody wants to shoot the messenger when you're, you know, bringing them a national title. But no, it was not a pleasant time. There were a lot of reporters, newspaper guys, whose names I will not mention because I don't want to give them any more exposure. But I just will not... you know, I was not accepted at all. It took quite a while before I was a big part of the family.
Did you ever consider leaving the job during those early years where you felt you weren't accepted?
No.
No.
No. You know, this is the second time in my life that this had happened. When I joined the St. Louis Blues of the National Hockey League, I replaced the legendary Dan Kelly. And I don't know how much you know about hockey, but Dan was the American-based play-by-play guy to beat all play-by-play guys. He was the man. It was a KMOX and KDNL in St. Louis had a disagreement. KMOX, of course, the radio voice of every sports event in St. Louis, and KDNL, which did the TV for the Blues in those days. Certain things, KMOX wanted certain things, and the ultimate bottom line was it was a KMOX broadcast that KDNL was picking up as a simulcast. So the decision was made to split the broadcast, and I got hired by Emil Francis. I got hired to do the Blues television. So I was replacing a Hall of Famer. I was replacing a man who was beloved, and I had to have thick skin. And the same thing happened when I went to Alabama. I was replacing John Forney, who had done 30 years tied broadcasting. John got ill, unfortunately, and could not continue. And I stepped in. I knew some of the right people. I probably wasn't the best candidate for the job, but I knew the right people, and I got the job. And it just took a while for me to be accepted. But thankfully, you know, after a few years, I was. And over 36 years now, it's been a magnificent marriage until it ended.
Did you, when you did end up at Alabama, did you look at it as a potential stepping stone to something else? Or when you got there, did you look at this as a job that you hoped to hold on to for 36 years in your career?
Yeah, no, I hope to hold on to it. I, even though I was born and raised a pro sports guy living in New York City, I very quickly understood the severity and the scope, and that's a positive severity, the significance of Alabama football and Alabama basketball and Alabama baseball, all of which I had done over the years. So I knew how big it was. I knew that, you know, this was one of those special jobs, along with UCLA basketball and Kentucky basketball and, you know, Notre Dame and a few others. I knew that this was one of those few spectacular positions that I was lucky in. Hoping I'd be around for week number two. I didn't know if I would make it to week two. And then I was hoping to stay until, you know, my thought booth and directly to the cemetery that way.
What was your goal as an aspiring sportscaster in New York? What jobs were you chasing when you were younger?
Well, I was doing minor league hockey. I was doing the Eastern Hockey League. That's the league about which the movie Slapshot was made, if you're familiar with that movie. The lowest of the low rung of pro hockey. But I wanted to do the Rangers. I wanted to do the Islanders. You know, in my day, when I was, you know, when I was growing up, the Giants and Dodgers had left. The Mets hadn't been born yet. So I was a Yankee fan. That's the only team in town. I was in that short period. There was just that short period of time where there was just one baseball team in New York City. And so I wanted to do all of that stuff. The reality was it wasn't going to happen. And I was doing some pretty good hockey broadcasts at the time. So I just worked my way up the minor league ladder, if you will, and then eventually made my way to Birmingham, Alabama, when the World Hockey Association came into existence. And if you're not old enough, folks, to know what that was, the WHA was the rival major league to the National Hockey League in those days. And of course, many of the teams that are in the NHL today were originally in the WHA, the World Hockey Association. So that's what got me to Birmingham. And then one job led to the next, to the next, to the next.
What announcers did you look up to when you were younger, or even attempt to model your own career after?
Well, I looked up to Marv Albert. In those days, he was doing the Knicks and the Rangers on WNBC Radio 66 in New York. I looked up to Bob Wolfe, who had been doing the Knicks and the Rangers on television in those days. I loved Mel Allen, who, in an ironic way, was a former voice of the Alabama Crimson Tide, was from Alabama, and he moved to New York. I was from New York, and I moved to Alabama. But Mel and I would talk a good bit over the years, and so I looked up to him. So those were three names that that really had a good bit of impact. Then I got to meet Bob Costas when he and I were both young guys working in the Eastern Hockey League. And since then, of course, guys like Kevin Harlan has become a dear friend. And I love listening to his work. The descriptions that he does are par excellence. So I've been impacted by a number of different guys over the years.
Is it at all difficult to craft your own style when you're, no. I mean, like, did you try to model yourself after anybody specific, or were you always just yourself in the booth?
I was just me. I was always told by these guys, and I talked to all of them. You know, Costas would say, look, don't try to be the next Bob Costas. Be the first Eli Gold. You know, and that's the same thing I heard from Marv, and the same thing I've heard from others. Don't try, you know, and I tell that to people today when I talk to young folks who want to be I want to be the next Eli Gold. I said, well, you know, don't be the next Eli Gold. Be the first Joe Smith or whoever it is I'm talking to. Be yourself. I learned things.
Yeah.
And stole things from those guys even to this day. I mean, it was probably, I don't know, 10 years ago, whatever it was, I was listening to Kevin Harlan doing a Monday Night Football game. And I noticed that when the quarterback was in the shotgun, Kevin would say, here comes the snap to whomever it was. The snap is belt high or chest high or whatever. I had been saying on the air, he's in the shotgun, here's the snap, and he looks and does this. I didn't say where the snap was. And not that it mattered necessarily, but it mattered if you wanted to get better.
Sure.
So I listened to stuff that Kevin did, and I learned from that. Vern Lundquist, a dear, dear friend, to whom I still talk every week. We stay in touch every week. We usually gather together on Wednesdays and shoot the breeze. And I learned stuff from him. Again, though, I was on radio. He was a TV guy for the most part. And there's a difference in the economy of words and so on. But, you know, I've tried to learn from all of these guys who were kind enough to give me a little bit of their time.
What did you think about Vern Lundquist's last Masters call and him just retiring just recently?
Well, I was happy for him because I know that he and Nancy were ready to travel and do other stuff, you know, without having to worry about a broadcast. They were so wonderful. I felt so good for my friend. And he's good. I mean, look, we all heard all of those Masters calls, you know, throughout the week, the great calls of years gone by. But everything he did, he was like everybody's uncle. You know, they call him Uncle Vern at the office. And he is. He's just a nice, nice man. And I was thrilled that he received all of those accolades that he so richly deserved.
So you're calling baseball for Jacksonville State University in Alabama. Are you slated to be calling football for them in the fall as well?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Well, Jacksonville State is about an hour and 20 minutes from Birmingham. So they are part of the metro sports scene. And, you know, they won a bowl game last year. Right now I'm doing the baseball, and that's all we have announced. I will tell you that there will be more assignments upcoming, but I'm not okay. going to jump the athletic director making an announcement on his behalf. But
sure.
But yes, we have made plans for the future.
And then you're also calling games for the Nashville Cats, as you mentioned earlier, whose Arena Football League season is actually scheduled to kick off this weekend. How is it
right.
preparing
that is,
to
that's
call?
Correct.
How is it preparing to call meaningful football in April?
7 years of arena football. I used to do it on NBC when it was on NBC. I did it on TNN when it was on the Nashville Network. You know, so I'm used to that. And it's this week, though, is just like the first week of any season and dealing with a not so much a startup program, but the opponent from Minnesota, the Minnesota Myth. Here you and I are as we record this on Tuesday, and I still can't get a roster for them for a game on Saturday. You know, and I understand they're a new organization. They're taking their time, and they claim I'll have all the information tomorrow. So it'll, you know, condense my week of prep, but you do what you got to do. But I love the arena football game. I always did. I used to work with Sam Weich, and I worked with Charles Davis, who now partners with Ian Eagle on CBS. I worked with Ed Cunningham. Jill Arrington used to be our sideline reporter. We did a lot of really, I'd worked with John Riggins. He was one of my color men on the NBC telecasts. So I've had a lot of experience in the AFL, the Arena Football League, and I'm looking forward to getting back to it.
How many players are on an Arena Football League roster? Just because I'm thinking you haven't received that roster yet. You have all the prep to do. How many players are there to prepare for?
Well, there are 20 who will be active. You're also allowed four others on a practice squad kind of setup, if you will. So, but you know what? I've been blessed, Brandon. Your brain is just another muscle. All right? Your brain is just another muscle. Now, the rest of my muscles really ain't worth a damn. But my brain, I can look at a roster and memorize names and numbers very quickly. So I shouldn't have much trouble with that. Just putting my spotting chart together and all of that work. You know, my stuff for Nashville is done. I've been going to practice. I've been heading up to Nashville, been spending time up there. But I have literally, I swear to you, nothing about Minnesota. And hopefully they swear to me I'll have stuff by tomorrow. But who knows?
When would you normally begin prep on the opposition?
NFL, AFL, I go to work first thing Monday morning. Obviously I've not been able to do that yet, but this is the opening week, you know, cut down sure. day was Sunday, you know, so it's not like they're deliberately, you know, messing with anybody. you know, cut down day was Sunday, then they've got to get numbers and all those things and what have you. So, you know, I'm not surprised that this week is being is a little bit different. Thankfully, the Nashville Cats, you know, they have good people. They have been in this business before. And so they're ready. I've got their stuff and we're ready to go. But nothing yet for the Minnesota Myth, who to the moment are living up to their nickname.
What is the commute like to Nashville?
It's 3 to 10 minutes or so. It's not bad. It's Interstate 65, about 3 minutes from my house, straight up north to Nashville. So it's not bad at all. And when I did the Nashville Predators of the NHL, I used to commute back and forth as well. So I'm not that I'm a big fan of driving. I'd rather, you know, I'd rather fly. But this is very convenient. It really is. So it's not bad at all.
Was there ever a point during your 36 seasons at Alabama that you were tempted to leave for another job opportunity? Did those opportunities, were they floated your way while you were with Alabama?
There were one or two in the college world, and it really wasn't a job offer. It was more of, hey, if you ever leave Bama, let us know, would you?
Yeah.
You know, one of those things many, many years ago. I did NFL games for Sports USA. I still do. And that'll, you know, that's on Sundays. So that didn't interfere with my Saturday games. So, no, I never, you know, you don't leave the Alabama Crimson Tide. That is a, you don't leave it. Obviously, I departed and I was shown the door, but no, I would never have, I would never have initiated that move whatsoever.
What was your reaction when you heard Nick Saban was retiring?
I was surprised in that I didn't expect it that day, okay? I was in the bedroom here at the house, and my wife yelled to me. She goes, hey, better get in here. Look at the TV. Nick's retiring. And, I mean, we all knew he wasn't going to do another 17 years. But, no, I did not know it. But, you know, there are a myriad of reasons why he departed. But he's healthy. But I'm sure the NIL had some things to do with it, and the transfer portal had some things to do with it, and the hard work and the time, you know, you give up your family. I mean, you know, now he and Miss Terry are acting like, you know, husband and wife. Not that they weren't, but you know what I'm saying. He's now able to hang with the kids and hang with the grandkids, and his mama still lives here in Birmingham. So, you know, he's able to spend time with them. So, he's earned, he deserves and has earned every minute of free time that this retirement is going to give him.
Is there any poetic symmetry at all in that your tenure at Alabama ended when Saban's did? Like any solace in that at all, or are they just, two separate things in your mind?
It's just two separate things. They're coincidences. The coach and I have talked a couple of times since, but, you know, we got along wonderfully. Nick Saban and I got along wonderfully. We weren't compadres. You know, we didn't go out to dinner and hang out or anything like that. But, you know, we got along wonderfully. And so, you know, but no, I, the fact that it's happened like this, you know, it doesn't, I don't know if there was certainly no tie one to the other. I think it was two totally separate incidents, if you will.
Yeah. Did Nick Saban build a program and a system at Alabama that you believe can succeed without him, or was he the system and now they're going to have to undergo a sort of rebuild?
Well, I honestly don't know, and I'm not dodging your question, Brandon. I have never met Kalen DeBoer. To this day, I have never met the man. So I don't know anything about him. I haven't been to any of the spring practices. I didn't do the spring broadcast, obviously. So I don't know. You're asking great questions, but I just don't know the answer to it. You know, but obviously, you know, Nick Saban made that process work. But he's not the only great coach in America. He's a very, very stupendous coach. But, you know, coach, to wait and see. I just don't know.
You you co-hosted a weekly radio show with Nick. How do you think he's going to do as he enters the media now after joining ESPN?
I think he'll do just fine. I think it's going to be in some areas challenging, having to maybe second guess a dear friend of his.
Yeah.
You know, he'd never like, he would never do that. He would never do that. And now they're going to probably, I don't want to say demand that of him, but look for more of that from him. And I don't know how he's going to handle that. And what happens on the day when, you know, he's got a, when they're picking the outcomes and he really in his mind thinks he needs to pick against Alabama. But, you know, is he going to do that? Is he going to be able to do that? Or will there ever be a day where he has to pick against Alabama? It may never come to that. I don't know. So it's going to be, but you know, the guy's good. The guy is good. And if he has to say something, it's going to be said with respect, but the respect that he has earned of knowing this game inside out and backwards if he has to take somebody to task.
Do you have, looking back at your tenure at Alabama, do you have a most memorable game that you called?
Well, I would have to say, you know, that's a good question, but it's worded differently. You said memorable. Some people will say favorite, and those are two different things. A favorite game, throwing to Devontae Smith to win the national championship against Georgia when Tua came in at halftime to replace Jalen Hurts. Memorable? Well, you know, the Auburn Tiger kick six, that run back in the Iron Bowl. Sure as heck, not favorite by any stretch. I could have lived just fine without that happening. But memorable? Oh, sure. It'll be in my memory bank forever. So it all depends on how you phrase it. But, you know, the national championship win over Texas at the Rose Bowl Stadium. And Terrence Cody blocking a couple of field goals against Tennessee to, as it now we know, saved a national title later that season. There were so many things that went on, but if I had to pick just one, and the game was terrible, the Alabama-Georgia game was terrible because the Tide was trailing all day and wasn't playing well, wasn't moving the ball well. It was awful. But the finish was to end up for the champion down.
Well, for what it's worth, I was interested in hearing your response to both memorable and favorite. So I appreciate your answer there. But I will ask, do you have a favorite sport to broadcast? Is football your favorite sport?
Probably not. Hockey likely still is. You know, when I started, the first sport I ever did was hockey, working up through the minor leagues, up to the higher minor leagues, the American Hockey League and so on, then eventually the NHL, the WHA, then the NHL, and with both St. Louis and later with the Nashville Predators. I've just loved hockey. I still do. My wife and I will, you know, watch the Rangers. We've had the hockey package on our TV. I just love the sport. It's what I grew up on. So if I could only do one sport the rest of my life, it would probably be that. However, with all of that said, I do love college football, the pageantry, the way people in this part of the country you know, live and die with their favorite team, whether it's Alabama, whether it's Auburn, whether it's Jacksonville State. Nothing like the passion that you get wrapped up in here in the Deep South. So, you know, from that standpoint, I love college ball. But if you said to me you can only do one more sport the rest of your life, and it'll be at the highest level, I would take the NHL.
And then what about NASCAR? How did you get involved in NASCAR? Because we talked about getting to Alabama from New York, but similarly, like, New York is not a hotbed for NASCAR or motorsports either. So, yeah. So how did you get involved in that?
I was doing minor league hockey in what was a bus league. In those days, I was in the low enough minors that we traveled everywhere by bus. And one Sunday afternoon, we're going from somewhere to somewhere on the hockey team bus. And I had a little transistor radio with me with a little earbud. And those of you who are too young and you don't know what a transistor radio is, you can Google it. But I had the transistor radio and I was listening. I'm just going through the dial. And I hear NASCAR on the radio. And I said, well, heck, I can do that. Not knowing if I could or couldn't. But I said, I can do that. So I made notes of who I was listening to. And it was Motor Racing Network out of Daytona Beach, Florida. They did all the NASCAR races. MRN is their more commonly known. And I contacted them. And the general manager of MRN at the time was a guy by the name of Jack Arut. Jack, of course, became a noted sideline reporter in college football for ABC and did a lot of auto racing and so on. And I talked to Jack and he said, well, have you ever done racing before? And of course, like an aspiring broadcaster, I said, sure I had. Well, I'd never been to a racetrack, let alone broadcast any racing. And then he said, well, great, send me your tape. And that's what they do, as you know, that's what they do in this business.
Yeah.
Send me your tape. Let me hear what you sound like. Well, the tape didn't exist. So I waited a couple of weeks and I called Jackie Arut back. And I said, look, I can't find any of my racing tapes, but I do have some hockey tapes here handy. Would you take that? Well, Jackie's from Connecticut, new hockey, new racing. And I guess he figured, well, if he can keep up with the speed and the pace of hockey, he can keep up with the speed and the pace of racing. So I sent him a hockey tape. About a year and a half from making it to the NHL. So I was doing a pretty good hockey broadcast at that point. So I sent him that, and he's hired me based on that hockey tape. They brought me to Charlotte in May of 1976. And he said, all right, we're going to bring in those days. People were not clamoring to broadcast NASCAR racing on the radio. It was not what it is today.
Yeah.
So he said, basically, I'll bring you in. If you do well, we'll keep you. And if you suck, they sent me home 41 years later. Actually, I chose to depart at that point. But that audition and all lasted for 41 years.
Yes, that's pretty amazing that it started with hockey tapes.
Yeah.
How was working the 1979 Daytona 500, and just how important was that race for NASCAR?
Oh, that race for NASCAR, for me personally, that legitimized for me my reason for being there. You know, if they're bringing me again, I didn't do all the races in the first couple of years. I was working hand selected races. So, you know, but when they sent me to the biggest race of the year, that told me, all right, you must be doing okay. Just keep working hard and stay with it, which I did. But, you know, that race was the one that CBS televised and America learned what NASCAR was all about. And that really began it on its meteoric rise at that point. So, yes, that was a huge, huge race for me, for NASCAR, and for our network, the Motor Racing Network.
And then is it true you were or you had a sort of close call with Dale Earnhardt's 1982 Pocono crash?
I did. I was working turn one. And again, for those who don't know how NASCAR on radio works, you have a myriad of broadcasters, two guys in the booth. You have somebody in turn one and two, somebody in three and four, or whatever the configuration of the track is. There were three or four people on pit road, and we would just throw the broadcast around from one to the next to the next. And yeah, I was in Pocono, which is a triangular racetrack. So I was working turn one and coming down the long main straightaway heading to turn one, which due to the lack of a better description it was a high speed hairpin due to the lack of a better term. And Dale Earnhardt and Tim Richmond tangled on the main straightaway, and Dale's car got out of control and it flipped a couple of times and it hit the scaffold upon which I was standing. And there was sheet metal flying everywhere. And I didn't know what was going to happen. So I said, well, if I'm going to die here, I'm going to go down talking. So I just kept talking. And I'm dodging sheet metal and so on. Long story short, obviously I survived and Dale did at that point. But yeah, that was very, very scary. I then went out behind the turn position where I was standing. It was nothing but woods. And I went out there and I got the piece of sheet metal from Dale's car. And I was flying back to Alabama with Bobby Allison that day. He had an extra seat in his airplane. And so I flew back with him and I brought that piece of sheet metal back to Birmingham with me. And it is still in my office to this very day. It is still sitting on top of a credenza in my office. But yeah, that was very, and then every time after that, Dale would come by on the pace lap. That's when you start the race and you're going very slowly.
Yeah.
He'd come by and he'd kind of tuck his head down under the roll cage bar and he'd wave up to me as if to say, all right, I'll stay out of your booth. You stay out of my car. But yes, that was a very, very close call.
And then where were you stationed at Daytona in 2001 for Dale's fatal crash?
That was me talking when he was killed in the accident. I was out there and turns three and four. And that was when you listened to that Motor Racing Network audio cut. That's my voice you hear.
What did you think when you saw the crash? Like at what point did you realize it might be serious? Because it initially
I didn't realize it. Yeah, yeah, you're right. I didn't realize it at all. Then after the white checkered flag, after the cool down lap, which is when after you take the checker, you get off the gas and you let the car slow itself down as you coast another 2.5 miles around. During that slowdown lap, Kenny Schrader stopped his car, got out, ran over to Dale Earnhardt's car and began frantically waving for the medical crew to get over there as quickly as was humanly possible. And I said, well, that's odd. That's not a normal reaction. So I had a feeling something was amiss, but I didn't imagine that he had lost his life. But yeah, obviously, a few hours later, we found out that that was the case. Very, very sad day, a terrible day.
What sport has changed more during your broadcast career, NASCAR or college football?
Wow. They have both changed in so many ways, but in different ways. You know, in NASCAR, the biggest changes have been in technology. You know, going from, you know, steel belted radial tires, you know, to you know, the bias ply tires and all of that stuff. Bias ply to steel belted radial, more appropriately put. There's been a lot of technology brought on in large part by Dale's passing, you know, the head and neck restraints and all of the accompanying safety. Speed offense, not to mention, you know, the way the game is played in general, the strategies and so on. So I don't think there's, you know, they both have had tons of changes, but they have been in different, you know, NASCAR going to stage racing and all of this. So both have changed extensively, but in different ways.
Eli, you were great. Best of luck with the Nashville Cats season kicking off this weekend. And I'm rooting for you to get Minnesota's roster over to you pretty soon so you could start prepping on that. But thanks so much for coming on the podcast today. I really appreciate it.
Brandon, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. That is Eli Gold. I'm Brandon Contis. This is the Awful Announcing Podcast. Please rate and subscribe to this podcast. Please also subscribe to Awful Announcing's YouTube page. But regardless of how you consume Awful Announcing and the Awful Announcing Podcast, thanks for listening and be good.
Thanks for listening to the Awful Announcing Podcast. For the latest news spanning the sports media landscape and more, check out awfulannouncing.com and follow us at awfulannouncing.com.